As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
It's Straight Outta Cobham, a show about Chelsea FC from The Athletic. Coming up, the Premier League is back as Burnley bowl into town. There's a League Cup final to look forward to, and I do mean look forward to, given it's A, not against Liverpool, and B, the women's team contesting it. We got your questions answered and my questions answered in the quiz, available for free wherever you get your podcasts and ad-free on The Athletic. This is Straight Outta Cobham. And after a brief break, we are back ready for the resumption of the Premier League as we get down the home stretch of this 2023-2024 season. What a mixed season it's been in the world of Chelsea Football Club. Could still end in glory, of course. We're here to discuss the upcoming game against Burnley, the Conti Cup final, and answer some of your questions. It's me, Matt, and I'm joined today by two of The Athletic's very finest. Hello, Luke Bosher.
Hello, Matt. How are you?
I'm all right, thanks. Yeah, not too bad. Managed to survive a break to Centre Parks, which is not really a break. If you've ever been there before, you'll know what I mean. Liam Toomey's back with us too. How are you doing, Liam?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm just glad we're back, because I think if we'd stayed off the airwaves any longer, the Straight Out Cobham community risked sliding into irreversible toxicity.
Well, look, we're going to talk about that. In fact, that's where we'll kick off. Producer Lucy put out the call for some questions on Twitter, now known as X, and we got plenty of them. Thanks to everybody who got in touch. Let's kick off with this little ruckus that is brewing between the FAB and the CST FFS. S. Gozy says, thoughts on the FAB statement, the FAB being the Fan Advisory Board. Seems like a managed statement from the owners and caused more damage than good. Andy added, have we got any thoughts on that Fan Advisory Board statement? Simon has written about this for The Athletic. Liam, it's all got a little bit messy between the two factions.
Yeah, and it's highly unusual for one fan body to effectively publicly criticise another fan body. Very, very strange. And it did read as if it was kind of a club response in another form. And, you know, we'll have to see if we get more details on that in due course. But it did feel like the Fan Advisory Board were representing more of the club perspective on this. And this is a problem that I think a lot of fan advisory boards have at different clubs. It's that they're often seen in bad times as effectively puppet organisations, as things that clubs set up to create the illusion of genuine fan engagement, when in fact there's maybe a bit wanting in that area. The Chelsea Supporters Trust clearly feel that there is not enough engagement. That was the key point of the letter that they put out. There was a lot of focus also on their warning against raising ticket prices. But I think the main point was that Boehly, Egbali, the rest of the ownership don't talk publicly, and there hasn't been a great deal of explanation to fans as a whole about what the strategy is. You know, we've done our best as journalists to relay what the club are trying to do, but that's not quite the same thing. So that motivated what the Chelsea Supporters Trust did. It was a big decision, I think, for them to publicise their correspondence with Chief Executive Chris Jurecek, because that is technically a breach of confidence. You know, that was a private correspondence that has now been made public. Although it did seem, you know, to anyone who's read the actual correspondence, Chris Jurecek's response felt like it was written with the idea that this might be made public, because it was very safe, it was very vague, it offered little in the way of specific assurance to the Chelsea Supporters Trust concerns. So this is where we are. I think the Chelsea Supporters Trust feel like they've been kind of fobbed off. The fan advisory boards are in place, and from what I'm told, they are doing some good things with the club. But a letter like that reinforces the perception among people who are inclined to think this anyway, that they are maybe doing the club's bidding, and that doesn't necessarily improve the mood which we've seen virtually every match day at Chelsea in the last few weeks, and may well see again now against Burnley at Stamford Bridge.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it, Luke? Because you look at the makeup of the fan advisory board, and I think people are immediately drawn to the fact that, you know, there's a member of the House of Lords on it, for example. But it is made up of genuine Chelsea fans as well. But even the wording of the two groups, I think, it tells you a little bit about it. The fan advisory board versus the Chelsea Supporters Trust. And I'm a big one in that there's a difference between fans and supporters of football clubs. But the CST has proven its worth to Chelsea in recent years, right? We saw how proactive they were when the takeover and the sanctions and everything was happening, and what they've done to keep Chelsea at Stamford Bridge over the years, and the redevelopment. It's good to have an independent lobbying group that has got some teeth and isn't afraid to be critical of the club.
Yeah, I think that's right. And, you know, it's a weird one. So these fan advisory boards are a massive sort of post-Super League thing all around the Premier League, really. And as Liam kind of said there, a lot of clubs have had, you know, teething problems with getting them up and running, and, you know, almost making it them feel valid. But I kind of see them as they're almost like the Lib Dems to the Conservative Party that is the overarching football club. In that they can often be, you know, the sort of whipping boys, and, you know, held responsible by the public for anything that's going wrong. And we were sold this reality, but it's not actually coming to fruition. And yeah, it was a very aggressive letter. I think that's what struck me. And you may sort of disagree with the way the CST handled things, you know, in terms of leaking the letter, as Liam said. But I think fundamentally, to say, you know, I've got the FAB letter up to say we don't recognise the suggestion that fans are not being involved in the future of the club. Fundamentally, you're really aggressively invalidating how a quite large group of people feel about a certain situation. And that, I think, is only going to sow further seeds of division. I think in these sorts of situations, you need to sort of, you may disagree with them, but I don't think you need to say it publicly. And I think, you know, ideally, you would work with them to understand why they feel that way. That may be different to your experience as the fan advisory board, but you need to work with the CST to understand, you know, the wider feelings of a significant portion of your fan base, I think. But it doesn't seem like that's the way the wind is going. So, you know, we'll see how this sort of spat plays out in the future. Obviously, improving results on the pitch, you know, would be an easy solution, but that may not be forthcoming.
Yeah, it's amazing what a massive impact that has on everything. You get the sense that a lot of this would quieten down if Chelsea were winning a few more games, although they have been doing that of late. It's going to rumble on, just like FFP, PSR, whatever you want to call it, Liam. Rudy says, heard a lot of noise about us getting a potential point deduction due to non-compliance, that we need to sell £200 million worth of players to comply. How much truth is behind this? Tushar added to that, what's the panel's stance on Cole Palmer as a player and an asset? If you've got anything new to tell us about PSR, FFP, and Chelsea's breaches, great. If not, you know, we're looking at players to be sold before June 30th, right? Is there any way they countenance selling Cole Palmer? Because he's he's the £100 million player in the squad at the moment, right? Not in terms of what they signed him for, but what he's worth. But obviously, you're not going to be able to record all of that as profit on the books. So how much would you actually get from it? And how do you take away by far the best player in the team?
100 million at least. His penalties alone might be worth 100 million. Yeah, I don't think he's top of the list of players that might be fire sold before the end of the accounting year. We've said before, Simon said it, I've said it on this podcast, the strategy of the ownership and the sporting structure they've put in place at Chelsea is that every player has a price. I think they're not going to limit themselves by saying that any player is untouchable. Having said that, looking at the current Chelsea squad, you would have to say that Cole Palmer is probably the closest to untouchable in this group with the way that he's played and the importance that he now has to this team. And like everyone else, he's on a very long-term contract. So there's no pressure in that respect on Chelsea to make a big decision on him. I think they're building around him. I think they, at the moment, they see him as a foundational piece of the next truly competitive Chelsea team. And it would take a very big offer to even make them countenance anything different. The only thing I'd say on the PSR element is that, you know, if you're talking about points deductions from the Premier League, the absolute earliest that could happen to Chelsea is probably towards the end of next season, because they passed PSR for this year. So it's about the next set of accounts. That's what people outside Chelsea are looking closely at. That's what people think they may have some difficulty squaring, the allowable loss for this coming monitoring period. And it's quite possible that what they do between now and June 30th affects that considerably and could make the difference between passing or failing. But the fundamental reality is that we don't know, because we can't see their accounts right now. Everything that Chelsea publish is a year in the rear view. So we're looking at a snapshot in time that is out of date. And we're doing our best to project the current reality, but we don't know the exact numbers of anything, really. So it is at best an informed projection. All the informed projections suggest that Chelsea have work to do to meet PSR this year, but we don't know. And they're projecting confidence, although would they project anything else?
All right, well, we'll wait and see. Leave the PSR chat for a little bit. Let's finish with this one from DB. Based on what you've seen, do you believe that Mauricio Pochettino is the right coach to take the club forward? Tactically, is he off the pace compared to the top managers? I feel like we've been asking this question pretty much all season, Luke. He's had a lot of criticism, hasn't he? But he's in a position that nobody else in the Premier League is, in that he's had to kind of embed an entirely new squad this season, made up of largely inexperienced players, and the experienced players he has had maybe haven't given him the level of service that he would want. Do you expect him to be in situ next season, or does it all depend on whether Chelsea are the FA Cup winners and Europa Conference League contestants for next term?
I don't know. I feel like expecting him to still be in charge next season, and DB's question, you know, do I believe he kind of has what it takes? I feel like they could be two very different things. And as you say, Matt, I think a lot will depend on how this season pans out, not just necessarily in terms of winning the FA Cup and maybe scraping a seventh or eighth place finish, but I think how the team performs on the pitch and if there are real signs that Poch is building something sustainable with this playing squad. I think that will be a big determining factor in whether he remains. It's difficult because I think, you know, we've been saying all season there are these huge mitigating factors with the injuries and the squad overhaul that you talked about that I think any coach in the world would struggle to deal with. But there have been some, at times, questionable decisions in terms of use of substitutions, squad players, young players that, you know, a lot of fans have been unhappy with and have, you know, baffled us here on this podcast as well. I think, you know, DB mentioned about, you know, tactically, you know, is he off the pace? I think we've seen some really interesting tactical tweaks from Pochettino, particularly, ironically, against some of the better managers and better teams in the Premier League that have seen Chelsea get some very credible results and performances from games against Arsenal, Manchester City, you know, less so against Liverpool. But it's been against the smaller clubs where Chelsea have struggled and continue to struggle, which is, you know, arguably where, you know, your Pep Guardiolas, your Jurgen Klopps, you know, earn their, you know, huge salaries, because they are able to break down those defences in a way that Chelsea haven't been. But, you know, to sort of bring it back round, I've just about seen enough to be, you know, I'd be comfortable with Pochettino as Chelsea's manager next season, because, you know, I'm a firm believer in that it's really, really difficult to judge a manager even by, you know, a full season at a club sometimes, particularly when Chelsea had such a huge, you know, squad overhaul last summer. So for me, you know, I'd be fine with it, as I've said, but I couldn't call it either way.
I've been back and forth on this a lot in the last few weeks in my head. As Luke says, we've seen certain performances. You know, the Etihad comes to mind. Aston Villa away comes to mind. Just two in the last couple of months where Pochettino devised, tweaked game plans that were spot on for the occasion, for the opponent. And those days give you confidence. But at the same time, there have been a lot of other days where Chelsea have looked dreadfully unbalanced tactically. And they are on course statistically to concede more goals in the league than any Chelsea team for 30 years. That is a really unflattering reality for Pochettino.
But he might tell you, Liam, that his team has already scored more goals in the Premier League than they did in the whole of last season. So I guess that that's the other side of that coin.
They did, although they scored 37 goals last season. So the bar couldn't have been lower. I think there's a lot in the pro category and a lot in the con category. Where I think I've landed on it is that I'm not sure there's any point in getting rid of Pochettino unless you have a high degree of confidence that the person you're bringing in is someone who could be the Pep or Klopp of the next generation. You know, if you're bringing in someone who you believe will be, if they aren't already, one of the best coaches in Europe, then maybe it's a decision worth making, because that would be a genuine upgrade. I'm not sure Pochettino is that, but I don't think he's bad. I don't think he's clearly unqualified for this job. So it's not a clear-cut decision. And what I would always say is that sacking a coach is only ever half of a decision. And who you bring in is just as important as to how it's perceived and whether it's a success or failure.
Yeah, and Chelsea men's first team are crying out for some continuity, so surely it'd be better to just let him start next season. But hey, we shall see. Maybe it'll depend how the rest of the campaign goes. It starts on Saturday against Burnley. We'll look ahead to that next.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League Two after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
A drop of claret in West London, eh? Wouldn't be the first time. Chelsea versus Burnley at Stamford Bridge on Saturday. Blues starting the weekend 11th with 39 points and at least one game in hand on the teams above them. The company guys, just 5 points from safety after beating Brentford before the break. Some team news from the recent internationals. Malo Gusto left international duty with France early due to illness, but he has since been pictured at training back at Cobham, so we'll assume that he is okay to be involved here. Cole Palmer didn't feature for England after a knock. Absolutely hate that description of an injury, but there we go. Nice and vague. He's been directly involved in 19 goals in his past 19 Premier League appearances for Chelsea. 11 goals, 8 assists. Interested, Luke, to see whether Raheem Sterling retains his place on the basis that he's been back at Cobham for the last 2 weeks, or if somebody comes in for him. And Chelsea got options in form there, right? With Nonny Madueke having got 2 goals, 2 assists for England under-21s against Luxembourg in midweek. And Mykhailo Mudryk scoring the goal that sent Ukraine to next summer's Euros.
Yeah, great moment for Mudryk on Tuesday night, and Ukraine, of course. Yeah, it's going to be a tricky one against Burnley. I'm not sure it's necessarily the game for Mudryk, given one of his, you know, best attributes is his pace and his ability to run in behind. And I think Chelsea will end up, even though Burnley themselves often, you know, try and hold on to the ball and, you know, dictate the passage of play, I think Chelsea will end up having quite a lot of the ball against Burnley because they are just a superior technical side despite their own problems this season. So, you know, with a lot of possession in and around the box, I think that potentially favours Raheem Sterling a bit more than Mykhailo Mudryk. And, you know, maybe from a Pochettino perspective, I don't know, if you look at Burnley as, you know, quite a winnable game and maybe a game to, you know, see if Sterling can, you know, lift his confidence a bit, get a goal or an assist or something and build him up, you know, for an important run-in for the rest of the season. But yeah, as you say, it's definitely a decision to be made on that left-hand side.
Just to add, I was told earlier this week that Cole Palmer's injury was nothing serious. That was before the Belgium game, but it suggests that he was left out of the Belgium game as a precaution more than anything else. So I would expect him to be involved unless there's some sort of setback between now and the game. Burnley have been, for much of this season, the nicest team in the Premier League to play. I still remember Luke describing them as beyond naive at one point. I thought that was a very good description on one of the previous pods. And if they continue in that vein, whether it's Sterling or anyone else, whoever starts in attack for Chelsea should really fancy their chances of getting some good chances and running up a score, because, I mean, they scored 4 at Turf Moor when they weren't scoring 4 against anyone. I don't think Burnley are a good team at all. I don't think they're a difficult team to play. This should be a straightforward win.
Albeit they're on their longest unbeaten run of the season at 2 games. A couple of people, Liam, asking us about midfield. AJ says, will Poch rotate his midfield or will he play Enzo and Caicedo again? Gabs chipping in. At what point do you as a club start to worry about the travels by players on international break? Seems cruel to play Enzo Fernandez after flying 14 hours. He only played on Wednesday. Surely you don't need Enzo to beat Burnley, do you? Can you sit this one out?
You might not need him, but there isn't a huge scope for rotation in midfield, is there? I mean, if you're going to play 4-2-3-1 with more attackers, which you might be able to get away with against Burnley, then maybe you can play Caicedo and Gallagher again as the deeper two. I'm not sure how well that works, but it might be good enough for a game like that.
Could put Chalobah there?
You could do, although Pochettino hasn't shown any inclination to do so. So it would be interesting if he does, because it would be a deviation from the way he's envisioned this team up to now. As for the travel, I think we're past the point of it being a concern. I think it's been a concern for Chelsea all season. With Romeo Lavia unavailable, Ugochukwu sidelined, there's been a lot on Fernandez and Caicedo, and every international break it's been the same story of them having incredibly long travel both to and from South America and within South America for these matches, and then coming back very, very late. I remember early in the season they came back, didn't they, about 48 hours before the 2-2 draw with Arsenal, and it's just been unrelenting for them in particular. And I think it there probably should be more understanding than there has been of the situations where those two clearly look out of gas in the second half of games, because I think the international breaks have been more debilitating for them than probably anyone else in the squad.
Yeah, a lot of it's about the time difference as well, isn't it? Not just the travel and getting over the jet lag. Away from international duty, Luke, here's Dr. Doolittle, who asks, do any of the team genuinely feel as though we can finish in the top six? We're 8 points off it with a game in hand and a home game against sixth place United after Burnley. Dr. Doolittle feels it's possible. What say you, Luke?
Well, I hope by team he means the podcast team rather than the Chelsea team itself, because you'd like to think that the Chelsea team at least think they can do that. But yeah, I don't know. I think it's one of those where Man United, Newcastle, Brighton, those are the kind of teams in there, you know, West Ham, they all keep stumbling rather than pulling away. And obviously that's because, you know, they're sort of all the teams from, you know, I guess you'd say sixth in Man United down to maybe even Fulham in 12th. Probably think they can, you know, eke out a, you know, top eight, top seven, top six finish. And they all keep playing each other, obviously. So they're obviously going to take, because there are so many teams in that bracket, they're going to keep taking points off each other, which is, you know, where, you know, comes to Chelsea's advantage, because obviously the game after Burnley, which we'll, of course, preview next week, is a home against Manchester United. And that's a huge game in terms of whether Chelsea think they can, you know, break into that top six, seven and secure European football for next season. I think they could. I mean, you know, it sounds obvious, but, you know, obviously in theory they could, you know, I think they've played well enough in individual games to make me think that they can get a result out of enough games to get the requisite points, whether they will, because there have been some baffling performances this season, even, you know, right on the cusp of when you think Chelsea and Pochettino are building something and, you know, it's kind of two steps forward, one step back with a bizarre defeat or draw or something. So I don't know. I feel that's a long-winded way of saying I've got no idea.
Fair enough. That's kind of where we are with Chelsea, isn't it? Well, they are unbeaten since the Carabao Cup final, winning 3 of 4, and they've got this absolutely ludicrous record. They haven't lost a Premier League game at home in the month of March since 2001. 38 matches unbeaten since then, and have won 32 of them. Burnley looked a little bit better of late, Liam, but you're still looking at a team who kept one clean sheet in 21 away games in the Premier League. They've also dropped 20 points from winning positions in the league this season. I'm trying to think of a way to spice this game up a bit and look at how they can hurt Chelsea, but they're just headed back to the Championship, aren't they? You can't really make a case for them pulling off some miraculous escape.
No, I think they're down. I think they can hurt Chelsea. Chelsea are on a four-game streak of conceding two goals. So, you know, they do give you chances. I think there will be goals at both ends in this match. I just think Chelsea should get more of them, considerably more of them, given how much Burnley give up to you. They just don't have Premier League quality. And what struck me about the game at Turf Moor earlier this season was that they had this blind commitment to playing out from the back against Chelsea's press when they just didn't have the quality to do it. And I just think that I know that has become tactically dominant in top level football now, and Kompany is styling himself as a modern progressive coach, maybe even a Pep acolyte. But I think there has to be some recognition of the level of player that you have at your disposal and the level of opposition that you're facing. And I think too often this season, Burnley just haven't had that recognition at all. And they've given up some absolutely ludicrous goals as a result. And Chelsea, I think, love teams that try to play out from the back against them and aren't very good at it, because they've got that two-headed monster of Palmer and Gallagher leading the press, usually. And they're great at generating turnovers, and sometimes that's their best way of creating high-quality chances. So, yeah, Chelsea heavy favourites for this one. Nicholas Jackson's in a bit of form as well, must be said. You know, started to find his scoring touch.
And Chelsea haven't lost when he scored in the Premier League this season. So if he gets a goal, he's still walking this tightrope though, right? We've got a few games left, about five games left, haven't we? Where if he gets booked, he'll get a two-game ban. He seems to have been riding that for a little while. So maybe that's something that Kompany will be looking at, try and wind him up a little bit.
Yeah, maybe, or try and get him to dive or something, so that he can then throw some dissent at the referee. But yeah, I think he's been good, and he's looked a lot more controlled in recent weeks. Less of the mindless bookings and mindless talking towards officials. So let's hope it stays that way.
Here's a strange statistic for you. Burnley have picked up more points at Stamford Bridge than they have at Turf Moor against Chelsea in the Premier League. Last question on this game for you, Luke. Who's on penalties for Chelsea?
I've no doubt that it'll be Cole Palmer.
Yeah, let's move on.
Hope so for my FPL team.
Yeah, same. All right, it is 3 o'clock kickoff at Stamford Bridge. We'll react to it on Monday's show. Next day, though, we're going to have a look ahead to the Conti Cup final.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
We are recording on Wednesday morning, which means we can't say for sure whether or not the women's team made it through their Champions League quarterfinal second leg with Ajax. But given they were 3-0 up from the first leg in Amsterdam, let's go ahead and work on the presumption that they did, in which case the quadruple is still on the first piece of silverware available to Emma Hayes in her final season. Up for grabs on Sunday as Chelsea take on Arsenal at Molineux in the Conti Cup final. It's only the Blues' third game of the tournament this season, given a bye through the group stage due to their Champions League participation. They hammered Sunderland in the quarterfinal before a hard-fought 1-0 win at Manchester City in the semi. I guess it's fairly significant, Luke, that Chelsea have just beaten Arsenal with ease a couple of weeks ago at Stamford Bridge. Do you think that'll be any kind of factor in this match?
I think it'll definitely be a factor for both sets of teams. Obviously, Arsenal are going to want to right the wrongs of that game, and Chelsea, you know, will go into it, depending on how you look at it, with a mental edge, you know, in terms of the fact that they know that they can beat this Arsenal team, who are a very good side, despite, you know, their own sort of, you know, mini struggles in the WSL. I just hope for everyone's sake that Arsenal bring the right socks this time.
I hope they don't. Wouldn't it just be brilliant if they didn't again?
Will there be a shop close enough to Wembley for them to buy spare socks?
Molineux. Oh, it's not, we are at Molineux.
Molineux, yes. Yeah, Molineux, Molineux.
Yes.
Well, they could play in orange socks then. That definitely won't be a clash.
The other significant thing, I guess, Liam, in terms of this game from an Arsenal perspective, is A, that they beat Chelsea 3-1 in the final of this competition last season, but also this is it for them, right? Because they're out of the FA Cup. Jesse wrote them off as title contenders on a recent show. They didn't even get through qualifying in the Champions League. So particularly for Jonas Edervall, who is by all accounts not the most popular member of the Arsenal women's staff amongst his players, he's got to win this, hasn't he? Otherwise he might be looking for new employment come the summer.
Seems like a lot of pressure on them. That, you know, it, for all the money that's been poured into Chelsea women over the last few years, Arsenal women have devoted considerable resources towards competing at the highest level and winning trophies, and they've clearly fallen short of those standards this year. And Chelsea are a very convenient focal point for that motivation, aren't they? Because you've got the recent game at Stamford Bridge fresh in the mind, which basically knocked them out of the WSL title race. And you've also got, you know, Chelsea's status as just the dominant force in English football, as well as the London rivalry. And I've never got the impression that Emma Hayes and Jonas Edervall get on particularly well either. There's always seemed to be a bit of an edge between them.
There was that cat business, wasn't there?
Yeah, there's just always there's been a bit of back and forth, and I mean, I guess that's to be expected, you know, between managers competing at that level. But for Chelsea, this is, it's clear what this is. This can be the beginning of the glorious end of the Emma Hayes era. This is their chance to kick that off. And I remember Emma Hayes talking about the Conti Cup. For the first 7 years she was there, they couldn't win it. For a long time, it felt like not the missing trophy. That's always been the Champions League, but an annoying one that they couldn't get. And they've been in the last four finals and lost the two most recent ones, including to Arsenal last year. So there's plenty of motivation on the Arsenal side. This is their season. But I think there's a lot, equal amounts of motivation on the Chelsea side as well.
And it'll be a really good boost for Chelsea. As well, to have Myra Ramirez available, because she, of course, wasn't when they played and beat Arsenal at Stamford Bridge in that game Liam was referencing. So, you know, a wealth of forward options for Emma Hayes. And I wonder, I mean, obviously, you know, by the time most people listen to this podcast, the Ajax second leg will have happened. I wonder if Kat Macario might get a start. Maybe, you know, I don't think she hasn't started yet. I believe she's come off the bench, you know, five or six times since recovering from that injury. 45 minutes from the start against Ajax might be a nice way to bed her into that huge game on Sunday.
Yeah, it is crazy how she's been able to impact things so quickly. Goal, what, 6 minutes after coming off the bench on debut against Leicester, half that against Everton in the FA Cup, and then laid on an assist in the first leg of the game in Amsterdam in the Champions League. It's a strange old tournament, the Conti Cup. Arsenal, the holders, record six times winners. Liam was right in saying Chelsea won it in successive seasons in 2020 and 2021. This is the 13th edition of the Conti Cup, and only Chelsea, Arsenal and Manchester City have ever won it. We shall see whose name is added to the trophy again come Sunday tea time. Elsewhere in Chelsea news, there's not much of it as regards the academy sides. They've also been on international break, with many players featuring and starring for England in particular. The under-21s go to Leeds in the quarterfinal of the Premier League Cup on Saturday lunchtime. They played them twice in the group stage of that competition. 1-1, drew 1. They also won 2-0 away to Leeds in the league earlier this season. No game for the under-18s. Kendry Páez has been busy. The 16-year-old was taken to a New York strip club by senior members of the Ecuador squad before the team's defeat to Italy. Older boys being a bad influence on younger ones. Just ask Luke about what Simon and Liam have done to him in that regard in the past. Not for publication on the podcast, I'm sure. One other note, Ashley Cole's made it into the Premier League Hall of Fame. Liam, are you bothered about the Premier League Hall of Fame? I mean, I see this and I kind of go, meh, it's a nice thing. But obviously, if you're having a Hall of Fame and you want to put a left back in it, it's going to be Ashley Cole.
Yeah, it's never felt like it's treated as a big thing, as a concept. You know, we have like a day where they announce it and people talk about it a bit, and then it's forgotten forever. Some of the names who aren't in it maybe undercut the credibility as well, John Terry being one of them. But it's a nice thing for Ashley Cole. And I think in some ways he's always been one of the less appreciated members of Chelsea's golden era. I mean, Chelsea fans on the whole really appreciate what a great player he was, but I think there's always been broader adulation for Drogba, Lampard, Terry, maybe even Cech because of his penalty heroics in Munich and that Champions League run. Cole, there have been less signature moments, haven't there, in his Chelsea career at least, aside from just being really bloody good at his job as a left back for a long, long time. But fantastic player and an amazing career for two London clubs. I think he's definitely less appreciated at Arsenal than he should be, although for understandable reasons. So it's nice for him to get a bit of shine, even if the Premier League Hall of Fame is as you say, a bit meh.
A lot of Arsenal fans, I noticed, trying to reclaim Ashley Cole when this announcement was made earlier this week. And I feel like that's not really on, given how they may have treated him in the past. But, you know, there you go.
Yeah, it was interesting that Arsenal tweeted about it will always be an invincible.
What they should do, actually, is they should present him. I don't know what you get. I don't know what you get physically for getting into the Premier League Hall of Fame. But whatever it is, they should do the presentation ceremony at the Dorchester with Jose Mourinho and Peter Kenyon.
I'm just Googling, what do you get for being inducted into the Premier League Hall of Fame? Oh, you get a personalised medallion and £10,000 to donate to the charity of your choice. See how much those medallions are going for on eBay in a couple of months' time, maybe. Right, we are nearly at the end of today's pod, but of course, we're going to do a quiz. I got mixed feelings about this one. I nearly changed it all this morning because I thought it might be too easy, but Lucy hasn't told me that it is, so hopefully it is of an acceptable standard. Lucy's got to do scoring because that responsibility has rightly been taken away from me. Liam, you're up first. Ian Martson spent last season on loan at Burnley. Which two clubs had he previously been loaned out to?
Coventry.
Correct.
And, oh, what was the other one?
As Luke leans back in his chair and smiles because he knows the other one.
The other one's gone out of my head. Charlton?
Charlton is absolutely correct. You should get that, really, because they've got Athletic in their name, I guess. Luke, first up for you. Who scored their first Chelsea goal in the reverse fixture at Turf Moor in October?
I mean, yeah, as we said earlier, lots of Chelsea players did score. First Chelsea goal in October. So many new signings to think about. That's the problem. I'm going to go... Palmer? I think I remember him scoring in the game, so...
Very good. Correct you are. It was Cole Palmer. I changed that, by the way, from who scored an own goal in that fixture, which would have been Amin Al-Dakil. And if either of you would have got that, I would have been rather surprised. Okay, so one each after a question each. Liam, here's number two for you. How many goals has David Fofana scored for Burnley?
I'm writing about him this week, so if I don't get this, it's kind of embarrassing. I believe, well, not counting the disallowed one that he had against West Ham, I believe it's four.
Four is correct. Obviously, he cannot add to that total on Saturday because he is ineligible. All right, Luke, here's your second question. Who joined Burnley on loan from Chelsea in August 2019 but made just two appearances for the Clarets?
I feel like I'm drawing a blank and it's going to really irk me when Liam gets it.
It's going to irk me even more when you pluck this from the depths of your mind like you always do.
I really don't know.
Just a couple of games.
I don't know. I feel like I'm thinking out loud. I feel like it was a midfielder and I can't remember who.
It's good to fish for clues because it sometimes works, yeah. But it's not going to today.
No, I'm not fishing. I don't know. I'm just like, so when Liam gets it and it is a midfielder, I'll feel somewhat validated. Or if it's not, I'll look stupid. I'll go Trevor Chalobah, but I don't think it is.
Well, you're right to think it's not. Luke, can you help him out?
I mean, Liam, you're not giving it back to Luke.
I was going to say, do I get another?
I was so confused because I was thinking, I think Nathaniel Chalobah had a loan spell at Burnley. Indeed he did, but that was back in 2015.
I believe it was noted restaurateur Danny Drinkwater.
It was. Indeed, Danny Drinkwater. So that's a steal.
It was a midfielder.
Yeah,
it was a midfielder.
Seeing as Liam has mentioned that he's a restaurateur, why? I'll bang this drum until the day I die. Why did he not call it "Eat Food with Drinkwater"? That is £1 million waiting to be made, and he left it on the table. All right, Lucy, can we get a score update, please? It is 3-1 to Liam. Crikey. Okay, final questions of regulation time here. Liam, you're up next. Which Chelsea player scored an own goal in last season's Conti Cup final?
I don't know, so it's a guess. Jeff Carter.
It's good, but it's not right. Luke, this is your route back into the game, potentially. The door is ajar.
I'll go like wild guess of Neve Charles.
Oh, it's unbelievable. It is absolutely correct. And we're at 3-2. And now then, this is where the tension really ratchets up, because if you get this right, Luke, we are going to extra time. And it is a rather interesting tiebreaker question that our producer and overlord has written. Here we go then. Question number three. Which Chelsea player scored an own goal in the WSL win against Arsenal earlier this month?
Oh, it was... It was Macario, wasn't it?
It was Cap Macario, yes. It's 3-3. We will go to a tiebreaker. Oh, Liam, that's just so unfortunate. It was right there. It still might be, though. So we will have messages sent to me privately rather than on our group chat for this, please. Nearest wins, as per. This is Lucy's question, so don't blame me. How many Premier League appearances did Vincent Kompany, or Vincent Kompany, as Martin Tyler insisted on calling him, make for Manchester City?
Oh, wow.
Got my phone in hand. Listener? Who's going to be there first, I wonder? Who's going to be their best?
Just Premier League.
Just Premier League. Luke's guess is in. My messages from Luke are just a stream of numbers, basically. 14,300, 85, 160, 1.5 million, and then the latest, which I will not reveal yet.
We have a similar lack of small talk, Matt.
We can text more if you want, Matt.
But yeah, always open to that. Yeah, yeah. And it doesn't have to just be number-based, but... Come on then, Liam.
Okay. Nice round number.
Okay. So Liam has gone with 400. Luke has gone with 345. I can tell you that the answer we were looking for was 265.
What?
Which means that Luke Bosher is our winner today. That feels pretty low, but you know.
That's crazy.
I mean, he used to get injured
at City
all
for
the
like
time.
More than a decade.
Yeah. Right. Pretty injury prone, certainly during the first sort of part of his spell there, though, possibly. But yeah, you know, it's a shocker, I'm afraid. Luke, how do you feel?
I mean, it's a hollow victory, isn't it, really, with that tiebreaker? But fundamentally, it's a victory nonetheless. So,
Liam, it was there for you and you let it slip. It's like the Carabao Cup final all over again.
I mean, what's less than a choke? Because that definitely wasn't a full-on choke job. Is it like, I don't know, like a mild clearing of the throat?
Yeah, let's say so. You rattled Lucy a bit with your reaction to it, because she's shown her working by putting an interview with Vincent Kompany onto our group chat just to prove that it's absolutely correct. But there we go. Luke wins the quiz this week. And that is just about going to wrap up the show for us today. Not before Liam tells us what he's working on for Athletic subscribers to enjoy, though, please.
A piece on 4-goal Premier League hero David Datro Fofana, who won't be involved in Chelsea versus Burnley, but has had an interesting season to Union Berlin and back. So it's going to be a piece looking at the ups and downs of this season and what it's done, good or bad, for his development.
Good stuff, Luke. Anything on the site catching your eye at the moment?
Yeah, there's a really interesting piece by Jacob Whitehead and Duncan Alexander, he of Opta Fame, that's basically, you know, analysing comebacks in the Premier League and why it doesn't matter. Scoring first doesn't matter as much anymore because teams are often coming from behind.
All right. I bet there's a reference to that Newcastle-Arsenal 4-4 game in there somewhere. I'll be going straight onto the site to read it once we've finished here. If you'd like to do the same, just go to athletic.com/ChelseaPod to sign up. That is the best way that you can support this podcast, but you can also leave us a nice review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods. We shall be back with another show. We're back to two shows a week from next week, so join us for that. We're reviewing the Burnley match, the Conti Cup final, and plenty more besides on Monday. Until then, have a great weekend. Enjoy the football. Bye for now.
The Athletic.